service. It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts. To ask a question, call 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Now, the host of the Home Improvement Show, Rich Orris, on the voice of St. Louis, KMOX.
All right, good morning, St. Louis, and welcome to the Home Improvement Show right here on KMOX, the voice of St. Louis. I'm Rich Orris, your host, here to help you tackle all things home improvement, maintenance, and remodeling today on a wet and dreary day here. Probably a lot of all the rain we've had in the last week, a lot of water issues going on. So whether you've got a question about some water issues around the house, a clogged bathroom drain, maybe you're trying to pick the perfect flooring, or even taking on a full renovation, this is the place to get your answers, tips, and expert advice right here today. You can give me a call. Like he said, the phone lines are wide open, 314-436-7900. Get in on the conversation with me today. Just so you know, no question is too big or too small. From quick weekend fixes to big projects, let's talk about making your home the best that it can absolutely be for you. And hey, we just might learn a few new tricks and along the way. So grab your coffee, settle in, and let's get started. And hey, for everybody, so I wanted to kind of start out with the whole unclogging of the bathroom sink drain, because this is a common maintenance occurrence. So we got a call at the office yesterday from one of our clients that we did a room addition for with a bathroom in it and all that. And she was having her bathroom sink clogged up. And a lot of times there's in the bathroom, there's a typical kind of easy way, if you're somewhat intuitive, to do that and to take care of that. Now, you can try and start out with a very simple thing called a hair snake. So they make these 20-inch long, called a hair snake. I use it in my daughter's bathtub to help get hair out of that drain right at the beginning. But a lot of these bathroom sink clogs are typically right there. They're not very far in. They're not necessarily so far in where you need a professional to help you out to get this taken care of. So we're going to take a look at this for my client next week. I think Tuesday or Wednesday, we're going to stroll by and see what's going on with hers. And just last night, I did the same thing for my daughter at her newer home that she lives in. My daughter, they have very long blonde hair, and it just gets inside that drain and kind of takes over at the pop-up and everything and stops it up and just slows that thing down. So, but hey, I'm gonna sidetrack off of that. I'm gonna give you the solution to that a little bit later when we have some time. But right now we've got Junior just called in on the line. So let's go to the phones. Junior, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yes, I can hear you.
Awesome. Thanks for calling. What do you have going on?
Well, I have a question about insulating between rim joists in the basement.
Oh, around the perimeter of the basement?
Correct.
Okay. What do you have anything there now?
No, there is absolutely nothing there now. And the little bit of homework I've done on the internet and stuff, there's a lot of, you know, we'll do it this way. Oh, no, you don't want to do it that way.
Yeah. Well, and there the part of it is there's pros and cons to different ways of doing it, and everything kind of has a little bit of a pro and con to it. And so starting kind of with the typical insulation that is done generally around the perimeter of that basement floor at the top of the foundation wall, builders commonly take an R13 bat style insulation. It's 16 inches wide, so it fits really well at the width height because you've got the 2x4 and then a 2x10 or a 2x12. So you can kind of cram that in there real nice, and it fits pretty tight and stays pretty easily. That is the simplest, most cost-effective, and easy way to insulate that, is to run that R13 around bat-style insulation, put the paper out towards the basement, and just put that in there, and it will do okay. The negative side of that type of insulation is it doesn't block air infiltration.
Mm-hmm.
In around the bottom where your floor, where your wall meets the floor meets the 2x that's on top of the foundation, and where that 2x4 meets the foundation, you've got three places in there that's very easy for air to infiltrate into that basement area. So
yeah, because I have the floor trusses that have the metal webbing in them.
Okay. So basically what happens is, and something that we see all the time, and I have a lot of people ask me when they take that insulation down from around there, or if they just look at it from the ground, a lot of times that pink or yellow insulation that you see starts to turn black. And everybody thinks, or there's areas where it's turning black, and everybody asks me, oh my gosh, do I have mold? Is that mold? And 99% of the time, that is not mold. It's air infiltrating in, and it's blowing through the insulation, and that's just acting, think of your furnace filter, that's just acting like a filter. It gets dirty.
Okay.
And that's what that black is. So the better way to do that would be to spray a foam insulation on that entire band board. It can go from kind of the plywood subfloor all the way down and then rest on top of that foundation wall, and you spray that foam over the whole thing, and you get a better R value out of the thickness of that foam. It doesn't have to be really, really thick. You'll get a good R value, so you'll be up to about an R17 or 18 or something like that with the spray foam, and the spray foam will block air infiltration. So that is a huge plus, because most of what you see and why you're uncomfortable there is because of the air that's infiltrating. Now, the downside to the spray foam is you can't inspect for termites.
Okay.
So if you can see foundation all the way around the outside of the house where you could tell if termite tracks are going up towards your floor, and you can inspect it really well from the outside, this is a fine thing to do, and it's a great way to insulate and stop the air, like we said. But you got to be able to inspect for those termites from the outside and have some foundation and see the trails and know if you're getting them or not. And so that's the big downfall of that, is they can't go around on the inside of the basement and inspect for termites.
Okay. Yeah, there's the top of the basement wall all the way around. You can see about a foot of concrete all the way around the house outside.
Yeah. Yep. So that's a good thing. So they can see that from the outside. Then you're pretty well off and good to go ahead and do the full spray foam. Now, the mediocre kind of middle way to do it is you buy cans of that spray foam, like you could buy the small cans, and you basically just go around that band board and you spray that foam insulation, like with the straw coming out of the end of the can, and you spray it kind of under that 2x4 where it meets the concrete. You spray that and seal that up, and then where that 2x4 has the 2x10 floor joist, or in your case, probably a little taller joist sitting there with the webbing, you spray the bottom of that, and then you spray kind of where the plywood sits on that floor also, because those are three major areas. And then any wires, anything coming through, if you have where the AC comes in, you have wires coming in, you spray all those holes and you fill those holes. So you're basically trying to block all of that air from infiltrating with a can of spray foam as you go around. It's very time consuming.
Yeah.
And it's hard to find everything and know that you've gotten absolutely everything. If you did that, then you could do the fiberglass bat and it would work pretty well, and that would stop a lot of that air from infiltrating. But it takes so much time. It's so much quicker and easier to just spray with that gun and that hose and spray that whole band board at one time. You get 100% of everything.
One way I was going to ask about, I had done some homework on, was using the foil-faced foam that you buy in like 4x8 sheets.
Uh-huh.
And then cut out the squares to go in each one, and then use the spray foam around that to seal it in there.
You could do that, but your foam board that you put, if you want to get a good R value, those don't have a lot of R value. So some of the best ones out there, they're only like a 3, like an R3 or an R4. R4.5, so you might need, depending on what you get, to get to like an R13 or better, you might need 3, 4, 5 layers of that foam to do that. So that becomes expensive and time-consuming again.
Sure.
Is going through all of that. Yeah, so
That's one thing I hadn't checked on was the R value of that, foam sheets like that.
Yeah, you're not getting a lot of R value out of them, so you'll need a bunch of layers to get up there. It'll end up taking more time and costing more. That's why I typically don't even talk about that type of version, because it's just more difficult to do and it ends up more expensive.
Well, that was the reason that I called, just to get some information, and if you knew of better way or not a better way, or
well, there's good, better, best, and I would say in your situation you should be good to go for the best way to do it with that spray foam. It'll work out well for you. So thanks for the call, Junior. Appreciate it. Hey, Jim's on the line. If you can hold through a quick break here, we got to get to our first break, and we'll get to Jim as soon as we get back. For everybody else, you can give me a shout, 314-436-7900. Don't go anywhere.
KMOX.
It's the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Now, once again, Rich Orris.
All right, we are back live here today. Got lots of time, lots of show, full show for everybody today. Again, remember, you can find me, Rich Orris, right here. Any advice you need all about your home, 314-436-7900. Get you right to me, just like Jim did. I appreciate Jim holding on through the break. Let's get to his call and see what he has going on. You there, Jim?
Yes, good morning. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, good morning.
My question is similar to the previous caller about insulation. I'm just getting ready to add some R13 insulation to my attic, because there's already some up there, maybe R6 or something, just a guess. And I'm wondering, do I put the paper side to the sky or down toward the ground?
Well, I would put the paper side down towards the ground.
Okay.
And that would be the best way to do that. But have you tried to measure or see, do you have like a blown-in insulation up there now, or what's up there?
It looks like rolled insulation, and it's about 6 inches thick.
Okay. So just so you know, too, basically right now in the St. Louis area, the recommendation of the R value of an attic in our area has gone up. It used to be R38, and now it's up to R49 is what they're starting to recommend. So anywhere from R38 to R49 is a good insulation value for an attic in the St. Louis area. So if you have something in there that's about 6 inches thick, and you're going to add another 4-inch, 3.5, 4-inch layer that's an R13, you're going to probably be lucky if you're at like an R20 to maybe an R24 total once you've added the second layer. So you're still going to be way, way under what is recommended in an attic. And kind of like I was just talking about the rim joist, another thing to consider is your attic should be ventilating. It should be moving air really well. And basically, it's same temperature as outside, if not hotter in the summer, or the same in the winter as how cold it is. So there's a lot of temperature trying to get in, and there's a lot of opportunity, just like that rim joist, to get air infiltrating around that down through an attic scuttle to get you up there, or can lights, or a whole house attic fan, or anything that penetrates that ceiling, a light fixture, anything, is a spot where air can kind of transfer, infiltrate through, and it can actually suck the conditioned air while the attic's ventilating out of your attic and just pull it right through that insulation into the attic. So you're losing energy on the ceiling of the home, first, second floor ceiling, wherever that attic is. So I would definitely recommend you could leave what's in there if you want, and you can blow in insulation on top of that and add a lot more, get it thicker, and get a lot closer to that R value that you need. And it's going to save you energy on the home, block more of that air from transferring through, and just be way better off in the long run on how that's insulated and everything. So you can, if it's something you were looking to do yourself, you can rent those insulation blowers at some of the big box stores and buy the blown-in type insulation. Downfall is you'll need a second person kind of feeding that in there that you can communicate with so that you're blowing it around and putting it where it needs. And you got to make sure that you don't block your attic ventilation at the edges of the walls, at the eaves. You might want to put some kind of baffles in there to let air move and all of that so that you're not blocking that attic ventilation when you blow the insulation in.
Okay, very well. Well, you answered my other follow-up question, was the vents. I guess I need to make sure I still have access to those vents and not push the insulation over those.
Yep, if you're seeing daylight at the edge of that roof at those soffits, the big box stores will have these too. They're like foam baffles. They're made of kind of egg crate material. They come 16 inches wide and 24 inches wide, so they fit between trusses or rafters. And you just put them in there and kind of staple them to the plywood from the underside, and then kind of allow your insulation to butt up against it and help hold it up. And those will let the air through that you need for your attic ventilation.
Okay, very well. Thank you so much.
All right, no problem. You are very, very welcome. And we're going to do the same thing again here. John, if you can hold through a quick break, I say we get to our middle hour break because we only got about a minute and a half towards that spot. So for everybody else out there, remember, you can get to me, 314-436-7900, and we'll get to John as soon as we return. All right, guys, we are back here, KMOX Home Improvement Show. We got a couple of people on the line, so don't forget, we got plenty of time for you as we travel through this. 314-436-7900, get you to me, just like John did. So let's jump here with John and see what's going on. You there, John? Can you hear me?
I can, yes. Thanks, Rich.
All right, you're welcome. Thank you for calling.
So in years gone by, before kitchen faucets got all fancy and stuff, we would just, you know, periodically unscrew the aerator and maybe take out the screen and that water saver disc and all that, and just clean out all the grit and debris that accumulates. Well, now we've got these faucets that are, they have the pull-out,
yeah, yeah,
sprayer thing, yep. The whole handle becomes the sprayer. How do we get that apart to clean those things out now?
So typically and they could all be, I mean, definitely looking at like the directions, the instructions, even searching the model number, name, model number, all that online anymore, you can get right to the PDFs that show insulation and parts and all the information for all these different products, faucets, everything out there, washers, dryers, pretty much everything. But typically on the pullout, the part you want to clean in that filter is on the back side of that big head, spray nozzle head, where the hose connects. So you kind of unscrew that hose from the back of that, and the filter that you're cleaning out and getting that debris and everything out of is either in the hose mechanism or the back side of that whole entire spray nozzle head. Now, key point, and take this from doing this for a lot of years and working in the industry, is don't let that hose go, because it has a weight on it and it will pull right in there and come out the bottom inside your cabinet. Then you're trying to feed it back through and everything. So word to the wise is hang on to that hose, or do something to put a chip clip on that hose so it won't go in, something like that, to make sure that doesn't happen to you. But yeah, it's in there. It's still in there. It's just in a different spot.
The connecting end, not the front, where the rubber.
It's not where the water comes out. It's on the back side of that head.
Okay. All right. Yep. Well, that makes sense. I can get to that then. I was just looking at this thing, couldn't figure it out. So
yep. And if you don't find it there, then it might be just a newer type of product or something. That's when I would say go online, find the instructions. It'll show the parts and how to get to that. Because sometimes it does get very tricky depending on the faucet type, all of that. So I'm talking about your normal Moens and things you buy at the big box store. You get into some of these really nice foreign faucets, they could be very different. They're a lot harder to install. So it could be in different places, different faucets, but that's where the majority of them are.
I think this is a standard one, you know, one of those.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that makes a lot of sense. I really appreciate your help, Rich. Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Thanks for the call. And let's jump over to Tom and see what's going on with Tom. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Rich.
Good.
You were just talking about insulation in the attic. Okay, about, I'll say 4 years ago, I added about 18 inches of blown insulation in my attic, and it's not the paper kind, it's fiberglass, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't been in my attic for a couple years until about 2 weeks ago, and I noticed I have three rooftop, I don't know what they call them, turbines or whirly birds, whatever they're called. And I noticed that up there, it has, I guess because of the turbines, it has moved that insulation. So now there are places where it's, 2.5 feet deep. In other places, it's only maybe 3 inches deep. It's just moved that all around.
Yeah.
I mean, I can go get it back, just push it back. What do I do to prevent that?
Well, that is a difficult situation. So what you're talking about is you've got the turbines that stand up off the roof and they spin when the wind blows, and that creates draw through that attic. So you could consider two ways. One would be maybe trying to change those turbines to a ridge vent where it's up at the top of the roof, it's along the ridge, and you close off those turbines so you don't have three specific areas that's just trying to pull that air and move that air around from. Or the other thing you could do is blow in more insulation, but use a different type, and you use the paper type that you were talking about.
No, this is not paper.
Yeah, so the fiberglass is very light. Air blows through it very easily. So if you took that fiberglass and you flattened it out and you blew more insulation of the paper type on top of it, the wind in the air won't blow that type of insulation around as easily because it's heavier and it's denser, and that'll kind of push down on the fiberglass and hold it down and hold it into place. So you can cap that fiberglass with about 6 inches of a different type of insulation, and that should hold it into place.
Okay. What if I was thinking of just go buying a bunch of like door screen and just lay it on top of it. Would that push it down too much?
I mean, if you did something, it definitely has to be something that like a screening material, something that totally lets air and moisture vapor and everything through it. You don't want to use like a house wrap that could hold moisture vapor on one side, or plastic, or anything that doesn't let moisture, because attics have a lot of moisture, so it's not a great thing to add any kind of layer that moisture could condense on, sit on, that sort of thing. So like a screening material would probably work pretty well. Something like that would you know, work well holding it in place.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. No problem. That is more of a common issue here than we think with the wind and the movement in the attic. And I could go on for a long, long time about all of that. So, but I think what we're going to do again, we've got a lot of great questions, a lot of great calls coming in today. Remember, you can get to me, 314-436-7900. We got Lydia on the line, but let's get to our break so that I know I got a good amount of time to answer Lydia's question too. So if you could hold through the break real quick, and we'll get to you as soon as we get back.
You're listening to The Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Now, once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, everybody, we're back. We got plenty of show. We got a whole nother hour after this segment, so feel free, get your questions, get in line, give me a shout, 314-436-7900. And we got a correction on the name. Lisa is on the phone. Let's go to Lisa and see what's going on. Are you there?
Yes.
All right. Hey, sorry about the name thing, Lisa. I like to try and get it right, so... What's your question for me today?
I have a problem with the water heater knocking when I'm using hot water.
Uh-huh.
And I like to know what's the solution.
So when you use your hot water, you hear like a knocking and almost like something's kind of banging on the side of the tank.
Yeah.
So that is basically a buildup of calcium deposits inside of your water heater.
It's only 4 years old, the water heater.
It's only 4 years old?
Yes.
So you probably have really hard water that creates a lot of calcium inside of your water, mm-hmm. your pipes, everything. So... two things you can do, and one of them that you can try is, the first thing you could try is to flush out that water heater, flush it out, clean it out.
I already did.
It
helps for a while and comes back.
Yeah. So you're getting the buildup so fast. So you're probably the only thing that you're really going to be able to do to try and completely get rid of it is. The first step is going to be it's going to need a new water heater, even though it's only 4 years old. To completely get rid of everything and to start fresh, you're going to need a new hot water heater to make that noise stop. But to prevent that from happening again in the next 4 years, I would say there's two things to do. One you can do is flush that water heater like once a year, maybe even twice a year if your water's that hard, to kind of keep flushing that stuff out of there. That might prolong before you get enough in there that you start hearing it again. The next thing would be is to get a water softener, have the water tested, and get a water softener that will take a lot of those chemicals out of the water so that you're not producing so much calcium in the lines and doing that. The water softener with the new water heater is going to help you the best.
I see. What brand do you recommend the water heater?
We typically use like Rudd is a good brand. That's a good one. So yeah, or A. O. Smith is another one that we've used. That's a good brand too.
Okay, I have the state.
Uh huh.
Yeah, and that's the I have a lot of problem with the water.
Yeah, I would go to A. O. Smith is a good one. All right, Lisa.
Who do you recommend for the water softener? For the water test.
So, if you go to ilovemywater.com, at that website they'll have a lot of information on the water softeners and the testing they do and all that kind of stuff. You can even see different systems and pricing, and you can set up there to have them come out and talk to you about a system, what would work for your home, your size home, all of that, and offer you a water. So check out ilovemywater.com.
Thank you very much.
All right. Appreciate it. Let's jump to Mark real quick and see what's happening there. Mark, are you there?
Yes, I am. Thanks for taking my call.
You are welcome. Thanks for calling. What's going on?
I have a 20-year-old wood-burning fireplace, and we're thinking about converting that to a gas fireplace, to natural gas. How big of a deal is that, and what are some things that I should consider for that?
So is a 20-year-old, is it like a metal box fireplace?
Yes.
Okay.
It's got the ceramic insert.
Yeah, it's got the ceramic. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The ceramic walls in there that look like brick, but it's essentially a metal box with metal pipe and everything. So biggest thing I would definitely consider is one. It's not hard to do. I definitely have that chimney cleaned really well. Get as much of the soot, all that stuff, out of those metal pipes. In the chimney from all of the wood burning that you've done. And then the hardest part about the putting a gas insert in there is that getting the gas line to it is how they get the gas line to it. Sometimes they come from the outside if there's something simple that way. If the basement's completely unfinished, they'll come around and go up into that firebox from the basement. So The hardest part is how do you get the gas to it? Is it easy to get gas to it or not? The logs, the hooking up, running, all that is simple. And all the chimney people that do those gas log sets know how to, they put a clamp on your flue so that it's always partly open so that when you run it or when the pilot light's going year round, you're not getting fumes into the house. And so they're all good at setting those up. For me, the biggest thing to consider is the fact that when you run a fireplace like that, and it was a wood-burning fireplace, as that heat goes up that chimney, it pulls air from the house. It'll draw air into that fireplace and shoot it right out the flue with that hot air that's coming off that gas log set. So the gas log sets are nice. They're easy to use. You can stack them nice. The fire, everything, it's aesthetics is wonderful. But with the doors open and that fireplace running, it's pulling a lot of conditioned air out of your house. So what I would say to consider, the difference in how to install and the cost difference and all of that, is consider actually a enclosed gas fireplace that has a fan, like changing out that metal box with a new metal box where you'll have a glass front in front of that glass log set. You'll have a blower that can, you could turn on a fan and it will blow the warm air from the fireplace into the room, the living room or whatever room it's in. And it, the biggest thing is it will not pull the conditioned air out of your home while that fire is running. It can actually warm the home. So that's a little bigger job. It would be more expensive, but it's a better system that works better, that saves you money, energy, all down the road also. So if you're going to be there a long time, you might want to consider paying a little more to have a better system.
Yeah, our current wood-burning fireplace does have a vent that draws in air from the outside when we open that up. And we do have glass doors and a fan system that...
Okay, so you could do it the same way, yeah. Yeah, you could do it the same way then. Close the doors and make sure that vent's open so it's drawn from outside. And that's a good way to do it.
Okay, now it doesn't have a blower on it. It's just, you know, the wood-burning... Actually, yeah. Would just suck in the air, but with the gas, would we want to put a blower on that, like you were mentioning earlier?
Well, I don't know that you'd be able to add a blower.
Okay.
Because the blower would go more with your metal box, not necessarily the gas log set.
Okay.
And that's where it gets more expensive to have that type of sealed system. But energy efficiency wise, it's a way better, works better, lasts better, and heats the room, and it's way more energy efficient.
What's a range of cost for something like that? You know, from just a simple insert to what you were talking about with the new metal box that's sealed.
That's kind of hard to tell. I mean, I think adding gas log sets could be anywhere from $2,500 to $3,500, something like that, depending on gas line, how they get everything there, what log set you have. Changing the whole fireplace box ends up including some of the surround and all of that. So you could be tripling that. You could be $10,000, something like that, maybe.
Wow. Okay.
Maybe $8,000, $10,000, $12,000, something. Without investigating the whole thing and seeing everything and going through it, it's extremely hard to tell. But sometimes it's worth just having the conversation and looking into to find out. So,
okay. Well, thank you very much.
Hey, no problem. Thank you for your call there, Mark. Good question. And we're going to get into our one-hour break. John, if you could hold the line through the news break and everything, we'll jump to you as soon as we return. For everybody else, don't forget, I'm right here. We got a whole nother hour left. 314-436-7900 finds me, and we will be back after this, and we'll get to John's call and many more to come after this. All right, we are back. Fun here. Second hour. Got a lot of time for you. Got a lot of time to answer any questions you may have. Definitely got a couple of calls on the line here, but remember, you can find me. We've got plenty to go around for everybody. 314-436-7900. Get you right to me right here today. And let's jump right to John, who was kind enough to hold on through the whole news break and everything. John, what do you got going on?
Well, I felt bad for that little Hispanic gal that called you Lisa.
Yeah.
Who after 4 years, gets a hot water heater has to be replaced in 4 years.
Yeah, that is
terrible.
Well, and just so you know, though, if you did some research, they basically say the life expectancy is around like 8 to 12 years on a water heater, which is absolutely ridiculous to me, but I guess it is what it is. So, unfortunately, in 4 years, she's about 35% of the way through the life of that water heater.
I've lived in my home in University City for 32-plus years. I put a new hot water heater in myself 27 or 8 years ago.
Yeah.
Still running. still running 28 years. My question for calling was, I didn't know we're supposed to drain those things. I've never once in 28 years drained my hot water heater. Should I have been, and should I be?
So definitely my advice for you, in every situation is a little bit different, and this is a sticky situation where there's a lot of differences of opinions on whether you should or shouldn't. But I think the opinion that I've kind of fallen into, that's in the middle of all of the different opinions that I've heard and different plumbers and stuff that I've spoken with, is in your case, absolutely not. Leave well all enough right. alone.
Yep.
Don't start draining it now. And that's why even after like the 4 years and this is happening, trying to start flushing it out now probably won't help the situation. So a lot of the plumbers are saying, well, once you're past a certain point, don't bother with it. And a lot of them say then, if you're going to do it, you start from day one, you have it put in and you do it once a year, every year, and you never stop. And that's a good thing to do if you can do it and have the discipline and just go through it. I do not drain my water heater. And it's kind of my advantages. I know how to install a water heater, so I can do it for a lot less than everyone else out there that has to hire a licensed plumber to have this water heater put in. So with that being said, I can be a little lazy and not spend as much every 12 years. And to me, that's okay. And I guess kind of worth my time and not going and draining it every single year. So it just kind of depends. But in your case, absolutely not. Let it go and see how long it lasts. And the next one you get will have about a 12-year life expectancy.
And I'll know I need a new one when I turn the water on. It doesn't get hot anymore. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it will either be Thanksgiving Day or Christmas.
Yeah, or after a hard day of workout or something, I need a warm shower. Hey, thank you, Rich. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. You too. Good question. Good comment. We talk all the time about nothing seems to be as good as it used to and last as much as it used to, all the way down to like a 2x4 and how they grow the trees faster and everything's different these days. So, but hey, let's jump over to my buddy Greg here from English Sweep. Probably heard the stuff about the gas log set and wanted to clarify some things with us. Hey, Greg, how you doing?
I am blessed, man. What a great show. What some great topics today. So
blessed too. I appreciate that.
Yeah, I'm glad you are, because I appreciate you. Just to give that guy a little more information, get your chimney swept. You're 100% right. Get it swept. Make sure he's certified, and make sure he's a gas technician. He wants gas logs.
Yeah.
And you can have any options of gas logs starting, in the 500 to 2500 range.
Yeah.
Plus, like you said, the big cost is getting that gas line there and getting the gas line run properly from the outside. There are holes and knockouts in some of the fireplaces, but some of the factory are contractor grade fireplaces, those metal boxes, do not have knockouts. And then once you go through that outside wall, you've just erased all the UL listings and all your safety things by putting a gas line in there. So, the gas inserts, again, depends what bells and whistles you want. If you want to redo your whole front, you are right about that 10,000. But I mean, it can be less than that. It could be, in the 3,000 range, depending on what bells and whistles for a gas insert that goes inside that factory built fireplace and then vents and draws its air from inside and out. So,
yeah, no, that is kind of what my mind didn't go to mention that. I'm glad you brought that up, because yes, there are those gas inserts that are sealed like that, that fit, that box fits inside the existing firebox, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Yep. So exactly. That can be a lot more cost effective if you find that. So, yeah, there's a lot of options. So getting with somebody good like yourself and learning and understanding all the options can really be a good thing.
Yeah, we just want to help guide him through that whole process. You know, that way he gets what the finished product that he wants that he's going to be happy with. So, but I do have another question. I know you're coming up the break.
Uh-huh.
I'm in a condo that we're rehabbing from my in-laws, and all of a sudden we were running the garbage disposal, and half of the power went out, but like 2 hours later, all the power came back on again. But it's been going in and out. I know there's aluminum wiring in this condo and a lot of copper connected to it. Can that be causing the shortage?
Yes, absolutely, because that aluminum wire can, it kind of expands and contracts a lot at a greater rate than copper does, for sure. And so they have to be attached really well. And when the aluminum and the copper are dissimilar metals, so if you connect anything with copper and aluminum together, there's a special wire nut, there's a special like goop you got to put on there that keeps it from heating up as much, so that aluminum won't expand and contract. So yeah, it definitely sounds like you've got a some kind of wire nut together where it's expanded and contracted enough to where it's coming disconnected and reconnected, and that is very dangerous because that's where you can get sparking and all that going on with that power turning on and turning off on its own. And I would definitely track that down and get a licensed electrician and get that taken care of.
Yeah, I didn't know if it had anything to do with the, like I said, we ran the garbage disposal and then it all sorted out. I didn't know if the garbage disposal was causing the shortage or not, but
it's somewhere around those lines, but it definitely sounds like something that's coming disconnected.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Well, I appreciate you. Appreciate your show. And if you know, if that person needs any more information, any guy, then call English. We'll be happy to guide them through it.
All right, Greg. Appreciate it. Thanks for the call there, buddy. We're going to get into our break. We've got Tony and Shirley on the line. If you guys can stick around for me, it'll be a lot shorter, a lot quicker break this time for everybody else. 314-436-7900. Get you right in here to me today. Don't go anywhere. More to come.
Back to the Home Improvement Show, presented by Mosby Building Arts on KMOX. Once again, here's Rich Orris.
All right, guys, here we are. We are back. Rich Orris here with the KMOX Home Improvement Show, helping you out, getting you some answers, seeing what we could do to help you out around your house, anything you need about or around your house. You can find me here today, 314-436-7900. We've got Tony on the line. Let's jump to Tony and see what's going on. Are you there? Can you hear me, Tony?
I'm here. I'm Tony.
All right. Thanks for calling.
Well, what my problem is I added an addition onto my house about 20 years ago. And in the last year, I've had trouble because they've said the vent pipes are in the valley. The two vent pipes coming up.
So okay.
Right now, I get a leak in my kitchen and my bathroom after this heavy storm. And I had a contractors out here. And roof contractors, that is.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to move those vents. He says that, and this is 20 years ago. He says, if otherwise, you're going to have this problem all the time. So I don't know who to call. I called a couple different heating guys, and I called a couple. I haven't called a plumber. I haven't done that. But I'd like to know, what do I have to do, or who do I call to find out what the roofer told me to do?
Yeah, so, and this is where it gets a little complicated for you, too, because you're basically trying to work with two separate trades to get one project completed. So it makes it a little bit difficult on scheduling because you need a plumber that can go into your attic and that can reroute that vent pipe and bring it out in a better location, you want to have the roofer to kind of make sure that they put it in a good location, or yourself or somebody says this is the ideal spot to put this vent so that you don't have a roofing problem with it, which is pretty much anywhere outside of that valley in a flat fall of the roof. It can be pretty much anywhere as long as it's more than 18 inches away from the side of a valley. You want it 2-3 feet away from a valley. So you need a plumber to move the pipe, poke it out through the roof again, and then you need the roofer to repair, rebuild the valley, put ice and water shield in it, do all of that, and roof boot and kind of secure the new pipe so the new pipe's not going to leak with the flashing and the boot that goes over that new pipe coming out. So you got to kind of coordinate it so that you don't have a hole in your roof for very, very long. That's the key.
Got a question, though. I have two vent pipes up there, they said.
Uh-huh.
One is for heat, I guess, the furnace, and the other one is, I guess, the vent in the bathroom. So I do. Will the plumber do both?
Oh, so there's a second vent. I figured they were both. I should have asked a better question to you. I figured they were both plumbing vents. So if one of them is a vent from heating and cooling, now you need a third trade. You need the actual, you need an HVAC company, a heating and cooling company, to move that other vent out through the same kind of area of the roof where it's not in a valley. You want that 2-3 feet away from a valley as well. So you need a plumber and an HVAC company and then the roofer to fix it.
I called a couple of them, and none of the heating people are. I haven't called a plumber yet, but I have called heating people, and they haven't responded as far as doing this kind of work.
Okay, yeah, it's difficult to find good people out there. I'd recommend Maplewood Plumbing for moving the actual plumbing vent, the plumbing pipe, and then I would offer West County Heating and Cooling to move the vent from the heating cooling system and make sure that's proper and works. And then you got your roofer that can come in and fix the rest of it.
Yeah, I've had three different roofers come in, and all tell me the same thing. After 20 years, this has been up for 20 years, and finally it's come down to leak.
Yeah. I'm surprised it lasted that 20 years.
Well,
I really am.
All right. I thank you very much, Rich. It's very, very I'll call both of these companies.
Yeah.
County and Maplewood, and see what they can do for me.
All right. Not a problem. Give them a shout. If you need any other recommendations of companies for any of you out there, you can call our office at Mosby Building Arts, and we can offer up different trade partners that we've used for different areas. And then if it's something that we can do, we can also talk to you about that too. But if just in good recommendations of people that I or everyone here at Mosby Building Arts uses, you can call our office at 314-909-1800 and see who we have out there that we can offer to help you out with on different projects like that. So let's jump to Shirley and see what Shirley has going on for us today. Are you there, Shirley? Can you hear me?
Yes. Hi, Rick. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you are welcome.
You start making me think when you were first talking about the first fireplace about losing a lot of energy. I have a house that was built in 1968, and I have only screens with artificial logs and gas in my three fireplaces. So I was told to leave the pilot light on all year.
Yes.
So that the spiders don't get in it. But then I also leave the damper open. Is that necessary for a pilot light? Am I losing a lot of my heat and cooling because of leaving that damper open? And is there any alternative?
So the damper does need to stay open. Generally, what they do is they put a clamp on it because it doesn't need to be opened completely 100% open.
Okay.
Like when if you put a wood-burning fireplace in there, it for the pilot light, it only needs to be open like a half inch or an inch or however much space just the gases from that pilot light would need. So there should be a clamp on it that if you were to close it, it would not close 100%, and that's adequate for the pilot light. But we do recommend leaving that pilot light going, and just turning it off, turning it on, going through all that can just kind of wear it out, cause issues, and stuff need to be fixed the more you do that. So just leaving it running all the time is the best way to do it. And, of course, Greg from English Sweep would tell you to have that checked out at least every year or two. Just have someone come out and look at those logs, look at that flame on the pile of light, make sure everything's working appropriately on that set just to make sure it's still working good and everything. But, yes, it is good to keep it on and keep that damper open. And, yes, you are possibly losing some energy through there. But the time you lose the most energy is when you run it in the winter and you've got the flue open and you've got the gas log set going and you've got all that hot air rising up out of it. And if you're not doing like the other caller that said, well, I can open my vent to the outside, I can close my doors, you'll still lose a little bit. That'll cut it down. But if you don't have that ability, it just steals conditioned air right out of the house, sucks it right up the chimney. It actually, a lot of times, makes the room you're in feel cooler on the other side of the room because it's pulling the air away from you and getting rid of the warm air from your heating system.
Okay. I understand.
So it's just inefficient. So like we were talking about, finding a sealed box that could fit inside of that wood-burning box is the most cost-effective way to eliminate that issue.
Okay. Thank you very much for your help.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you, Shirley, for your question. That was a good one, and a lot of fireplace stuff going on today. So anything you need out there, we're going to jump into our middle hour break here, but anything you need, anything you want, any question you have, any conundrums going on, give me a shout. Feel free. We got a whole another half hour for you. 314-436-7900. Don't go anywhere. All right, guys, we are back, and boy, a lot of conversation on insulation, fireplaces, air moving, energy efficiency, how all these things work and help, and it's amazing when you look at energy efficiency and the different projects that you can do to your house to make it more energy efficient. And here at Mosby Building Arts, for a while back, we did the energy audits, and we worked through a lot of that stuff and learning how the home is scientifically and what really helps when you build, how to build better, how to have it work better, be more energy efficient, all this. And we kind of got out of that whole system of doing home energy audits and all that type of work. And mainly part of it was because after you've done that for a while, there's certain things that just work, that you just know work. And it's the same circumstance. Every house is different how you get there, but it's the same circumstance for every home. So if you change your furnace and your air conditioner and you get higher efficiency units that work better, that, and it's going to save you a lot of energy, that is just going to be a bottom line energy saver based off of how better the new units are and how much they will save you. It will just work. And there's other things in the house that work the same way that we can look at and kind of say, well, every time we tested a house, here's the common things that we find. And sometimes you find things that are a little bit outside the box that attributes for small areas of what's going on. But there's larger things that are kind of normal for every house. So attic insulation, per se, is another one of those best, easiest, quickest ways to make your home more comfortable, more energy efficient, and just really work better for you. So blocking air infiltration, getting the best insulation up there. When you look in an attic and it's super inefficient with the insulation, you don't really need to run a bunch of tests to say, if I do this, that, and the other, it's going to make this work much better. Attic insulation is one of those areas that is definitely a top priority place to know. That band board we were talking about, the rim boards around the basement, at the top of the foundation, under the floor, is another big area, a big energy leaker in and out of the home, not to mention bugs and insects and everything else that like to come in and out through all those areas with that air. Remember, if air is coming, insects can come. If they're coming, water can come. Insects will follow the water, so they'll like to go to where the water is getting in. So if you can do things to stop that, you're just making everything a little better, a little healthier. So the next step is doors and windows. So when we look at what makes a home more energy efficient, you can insulate your attic well. You can make sure you have really good, properly installed windows and doors that work well and stop drafts and everything. And you can do that rim board, and then you can change your systems. So say your water heater or your furnace, your air conditioner, get direct vent units, get high efficiency units. You can change those fireplaces that are just sucking air out of the home in the winter when you're running them to a better unit that actually helps heat the home. You can make sure your attic scuttles are sealed up really well. Whole house fans, attic fans in the ceiling on the first or second floor that pull air through the whole house during the heat of the summer and the coldest part of the winter are two huge energy suckers that just literally steal energy from your home, make it cost more, and can cause issues with the home. So we can look at all of these different systems and go, you can get your home 80% more efficient without the testing, without all these things that they do, and it's better and it works, and we know that it works. A whole house attic fan on the ceiling, in your hallway. A lot of older 50s, 60s, 70s home have these whole house attic fans. And I have literally seen, and imagine in the summer when it's 95 degrees outside, inside your attic, if it's not ventilating 100% properly, it's 130, it's 140. It could be 150 in your attic on a 9,500 degree hot summer day. So if you have one of these fans and it just has metal louvers at the ceiling line, in the hallway, at the top of the stairs to the second floor, somewhere like that, or in the hallway of a single-story house on the first floor, I've literally taken the temperature of the ambient air a foot off the ground and a foot off the ceiling in that hallway and have seen temperature differences of 20 degrees, of up to 20 degrees, where it could be 70 at the floor and 92 or so at the ceiling from the heat that's pouring in from that attic, just totally taken away. I've seen the walls condensate. I had a client that called me in St. Charles that there was water running down the hallway walls and down the stairway wall, and it was from the heat permeating from that attic. That attic wasn't ventilated well. It was about 150 degrees. Heat is just pushing through those metal louvers into that hallway. You could reach your hand up and just feel how hot it was up there. And then the air conditioner is running, so it's just condensating on the walls. They thought they had a roof leak. I was there for a roof leak, and it was literally like, no, your walls are just bleeding water from temperature difference, like an iced tea glass with ice in it, out on the picnic table, in the sun, in the middle of the summer. So there's a lot of things we could do like that. So keep all that in mind in some of the next things that you consider doing about the house. You can find out a lot of these things without going through severe testing and all that sort of thing. So, hey, we've got Jim on the line, but we're going to get into our final break here. Real quick break for you, Jim, if you can hang on for a minute or so, and then we will get to you as soon as we return right after this. All right, guys, we are back. Final segment for you here, and we've got Jim on the line. So let's jump to Jim and see what's happening out there.
Rick, you guys are talking about attic fans. I have one, which we never use, and it's located above the stairwells. Yep. Do they make any type of cover a guy can put in from inside the house instead of going up in the attic and putting insulation in around the vents and the blades?
So they do make a they make covers that kind of go on both sides. So they make a cover that almost like a it fits over the top of it. Some of them have a zipper, so you go up in there and you put it over top of it. A good moving blanket would kind of do the same thing, but it just fits over it to try and stop that air from permeating down. And then on the underside, if it's metal, you can get like a magnet to stick to it, or you could just take some kind of board, a foam board, anything to kind of put over that and tape it up and seal it, or anything you could do to seal it to keep that air from permeating down is a good thing to do.
Well, the only problem is I'd have to put a ladder up on the floor on the side of the stairwell, which there is a banister there, and then try to reach over that open area. And there's nothing I could try to balance myself with is try to put a cover up on the inside with, you know, it does have magnets. And it's a long ways from that ceiling down to the bottom of the basement.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And and this is something that we look at and we remove these things for people all the time. But it is such a challenging job, and it's not an easy thing to do. One, because a lot of them are over stairs and like you're describing. Two, if you think of all the different steps, you need to know about electrical so that you can get rid of the switch and the controls and cap off wires, and you need to get that fan out of there. You need to know about framing because there's going to be a big hole, so you'll need to frame it in. You need to be able to insulate it, drywall it, tape it, paint it, possibly texture the ceiling. There's all these steps. You need like five or six different trades or somebody that knows enough to do all of the trades in order to remove one, fill it in, and make it completely go away, because that's your best solution is drywall over it, insulate it like the rest of the attic. It's 100% sealed and it's completely gone away. Because even if you put a magnet on it, it'll block some of that air, but a lot of heat will still transfer. If you cover it up from the top, a lot of that heat's going to transfer. What you're sealing it with will help, but none of that has a very good R value. So it can still transfer just a lot of heat and a lot of temperature just permeating through it.
My best bet might be just leave well enough alone instead of going up in the attic and walking across the joists and so on and so forth and putting a foot through the ceiling. So
yeah,
I might just leave it the way it is and just, you know, bear and be with it and be done with it. No sense fooling with it.
Well, if it's not causing you issues that you know about or see about, it's causing you issues by the way of your energy bills are somewhat higher because that's there, but that's nothing you've noticed. I'm talking about issues like the lady that literally called us and thought she had a roof leak because water was running down the stairway wall, and she could see the moisture in the liquid on the wall and water marks, and it was because of that fan. That's a different scenario. Her fan's gone because it got that bad for her. So yeah. If all you're doing is spending extra money, then it's not the worst scenario in the world for you, and you definitely have to be very careful when performing work like that and getting up into your attic and in areas like that or into crawl spaces, different things, because it accidents from there can be catastrophic. And I can tell you about a house I looked at that they wanted us, the original call came in to Mosby Building Arts because they wanted us to finish some attic work with their ventilation and their insulation in their attic. And then they also wanted us to do a drywall patch on the ceiling. And when I got there, the ceiling was 18 feet high in the living room. That's where the drywall patch was. And the insulation and attic ventilation work was being performed by the homeowner. So I met with the wife, and the husband was actually in the hospital and talked to me from the phone from his hospital bed. He fell through the ceiling 18 feet down and landed on the back of his couch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm like, leave that to the professionals.
Right. Like I say, I have no problem with sweating or any moisture or anything like that. So I think I just let it be, and thank God there ain't no problems with it. Hey, thank you so much for the program. And tell Mike hello. He's helped me out an awful lot through the years, and you have too. So God bless you guys.
All right. We will do it. Thanks for the call, Jim. Appreciate it. That was good. It's good things to think about, and the situation is there for everyone that has that. It's really, you just have to weigh your options and go with, you know, get educated, like through this program, having conversations, talking to people, and then understanding what that is. And then you can make a good educated decision on what should you do, how should you do it, and how long you're going to live on in your home. All these factors come into play with what weighs into all of those decisions for your house. So, and you do those decisions with all sorts of things with your life. You think of all these things differently, like a vehicle and how long am I going to plan to own it and what am I going to go through and what am I after? And some people are more worried about gas mileage. Some people are more worried about the type and the social status and having this vehicle, and they don't really care about what kind of gas mileage it gets. And those, all those things apply to you in your home the same way to think about in how you remodel, what you pick, what you're doing. And so here, what I do on a daily basis and thinking about all this and working through this with clients is really trying to just get them to a place where they can understand it and know, then they can take their scenario in the questions of how much of an investment do I want to spend? How long am I going to live in this house? All these different scenarios to figure out, is this of value to me? Will this be a good value for me and what I'm doing and how I get through my daily life and my remaining time in this home for everybody? So trying to figure that out and get through it is a great thing to do, and I think it helps out. And not the same answer for everybody. That's why a lot of these questions and answers, there's three different ways to insulate this. There's three different ways to figure it out. There's three different ways to seal it up. And the whole good, better, best theory and trying to figure out which one is actually best for you. Because sometimes the good is the best for you, and sometimes the best is the best for someone else. And you just got to kind of understand it and be able to know and pick. It's a great thing to do and to figure out how to get through that. So there's a lot of different areas like that that you can look at in why you're trying to improve, what you're trying to improve, and is it really going to work for you? So if you're not going to be in your home very, very long, like I made this exact decision with my heating and cooling system, because when I needed an air conditioner, do I go ahead and do the furnace at the same time and upgrade the whole system and make it way more energy efficient? Well, I kind of looked at my plans and thought, if I'm only going to be in this house for maybe 4 more years and I spend all this and it's going to take me 7 to 10 years to recuperate the money back, I've spent over what I'm going to get back out of it. So I just did the air conditioner and we take it from there, and I'm spending a little bit more monthly, but that's okay because I'm only going to be there so long, and let the next people, the next homeowner, worry about that when it's their time. So hey, had a great time, had a long list of really good questions. Hopefully we got through them all real well and helped everybody out. So hey, everybody out there, be good to each other, be good to your homes, have a good week, and I will talk to everybody next week.